Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. This week, it's my pleasure to bring to you a presentation from the LDN Book Volume 2 Tour, October 2020.
Thank you very much. And it really helps that Dan gave such a good presentation on the pharmacology and history of LDN, so people will understand what I'm talking about without me having to go into details. So, how did we get here today? Just to give you a brief overview before we start talking about the book. If we go back to before I was diagnosed, my father had rheumatoid arthritis in his knees and his hips, and he was hard of hearing and he never answered the phone. But this particular day, before Christmas 1999, maybe a couple of weeks before, something like that, I can't remember. I'd just come home from work, it's been snowing, the traffic was really bad, the roads were bad. And I just got in and my friend was here and she was going to cut my hair. And she said to me, you know, take your coat off, hurry up. She'd got somewhere to go. I was late because of the traffic and the weather. And I had no sooner taken my coat off and the phone rang, it was my father. Now he doesn't use the phone, or he didn't anyway. And he said, your mother's had a heart attack and they're now taking her in the ambulance, but they won't let me go with her. Now, he was in a wheelchair. So I said to him, tell them to take you. I'm on my way and I will look after you. Fortunately, my husband and my youngest daughter came as well in a separate car. I just got in the car and went. And when we got there, my mother's condition was critical. She had been given some medication, which you can only ever take once in a lifetime, that was going to help save her, which it did, but I didn't know that at the time. So my husband came, but they wouldn't let my father stay at the hospital because he was in a wheelchair. So my husband took my father and my daughter to my parents' house. And I decided that I was going to sit with my mum and I was going to hold her hand and I was going to stay awake all night because I was really scared and frightened that if I went to sleep, she would die. By keeping awake was going to keep her alive. It made sense at the time. It was a very long night and it was, I'm an only child and I was very, very close to my parents. So it was very stressful indeed. I came home, my mum did survive, but she needed care. And I had both my parents because my father couldn't look after my mum because he needed help to look after himself. They came and stayed with me. And I was working full time and I was having phone calls from work saying, can you come back? Can you come back? When are you coming back? And I went back to work because a friend of ours is a nurse and she came and looked after my mum and dad for me so I could go back to work. But I was so tired, unbelievably tired. And I was dragging myself out of bed, driving to work, working, coming home, lying down. That was all I could do. I was just so, so tired. So this went on for a while. And I spoke to the people at work and said, I really can't do this anymore. I can't work full time. It's killing me. I didn't understand, obviously, what was wrong with me. They allowed me to go part-time, so I only worked four days a week instead of five. but it made absolutely no difference. And I was getting sick. I got the flu, I had gastroenteritis, I had a tooth abscess, I had numbness in my legs, all different sorts of things. Did I go to the doctors? No, because it was all temporary and it was going to go and I was going to be fine. I said to my husband, because it wasn't fine, could we go away for Easter and have a break, go away, and I'd leave all my illness at home, and when I come back, I would be healthy. Sounds a really good plan. My husband couldn't get time off work. He was self-employed and he had a lot of work booked. My daughter was away at school, but obviously she had the school holidays, and my eldest daughter had left home by this time. So my youngest daughter and I went to Portugal, and Portugal in those days was meant to be really hot and sunny. And we got there and it was cold, wet and windy, and the apartment had drained the central heating, so there was no heating. And it was really strange, because when we went out for a walk and the wind and the rain was hitting my face, the left-hand side of my face was numb with pins and needles. And I can remember saying to my husband, I will have to go and see a doctor when I get home, because it's really strange that the wind has caused me to have this numbness and pins and needles in my face. Rain has never done that before. And I was very cold and I was very tired. And we'd only gone for a week, thank goodness. It seemed like a lifetime. So when I got home, I went to see my neurologist, doctor, and I explained all my symptoms and problems. And he said I needed to see a neurologist. Now, I couldn't get to see a neurologist until the start of August. And in the in-between time, I had on my left-hand side of the body, completely left-hand side, it moved slowly. It was my face first, and then it went down to my arm and my shoulder, and then my body, till it went right down to my toes. Completely numb, pins and needles, which you would think, if you've got something that is numb, that you wouldn't feel anything, but I felt everything. Just having a sheet on me in bed, just over my left-hand side, was really painful. I then had, and the reason why I had stopped work, because I carried on, I went back to work after Portugal, but I had double vision and I wore a patch over my eye, kept swapping it over, and then gradually things got so bad that I couldn't get out of bed. But the double vision was really bad. It was a case of looking at everything, and it was about that much out, so you could just see everything double. I lost the hearing in my left ear completely, didn't hear a thing. I had vertigo, I had no balance, I lost my bowel and bladder control, and slowly numbness, pins and needles, restless legs, burning limbs, choking on food, slurring my words, cognitively not being able to remember anything. I would try and put a sentence together to joining a conversation, but the time I'd got the sentence together, the conversation moved on three topics, so it was totally random what came out of my mouth. And the neurologist, when I got to see him, decided that I needed a lumbar puncture, an MRI, evoked potential tests, and 28 different blood tests. He thought that I'd either got a tropical disease, but I hadn't actually been anywhere tropical, had a mild stroke, I had brain tumour, or MS. And I didn't like any of those options. I'd have been quite happy with a fifth option, something that could be treated easily and it would fix me. And he got me to come in the hospital, and I was given a bed, and the nurse came to see me and she said to me, how long have you had MS? So I said, I haven't got MS, because the doctor hadn't actually told me. But after she said that, I thought maybe she knew what she was talking about. Eventually, the neurologist came and he did confirm I had MS. He then gave me a 3-day course of steroids, and my condition was deteriorating so quickly, he decided after the steroids to do another MRI. I did ask what the difference was between the two MRIs, and he said they were the same. However, he gave me another 3 days course of steroids. The reason being, he said, was that he was frightened that I'd end up blind and deaf. So now I probably wouldn't have steroids again. I didn't like them. And the second lot didn't do any good anyway, apart from made me blow up. I was very bloated. My face was very red. I was like a tomato. So in between being diagnosed with relapsing and remitting MS, every 6 months I had a relapse. More or less you could time it. So my level of fitness was here, say, when I first became sick. Then I would have a relapse and I'd drop. And then sort of 4 months afterwards, I'd climb up a little bit. And then I'd get another relapse and drop. Then I'd go up a little bit and drop. And this is how it went until September 2003, when I was told I was secondary progressive MS and there was nothing more that could be done for me. And the neurologist did many different tests, and he helped sit me down and he put his hand across the desk and said, I'm really sorry to tell you you're secondary progressive now. There's nothing more we can do. And he opened the door and showed me out. I was feeling abandoned, I guess, was how I was feeling. I can remember saying to my husband, he may as well have said, go home, die quietly, don't make a fuss, you're an embarrassment. You know, there was nothing offered that could help or assist me in any way. My husband, being self-employed, when he worked in television and he always worked away. And I was lucky enough, my next door neighbour used to keep his eye on me. I was in bed all the time. I was asleep. I didn't take a lot of looking after, apart from when I needed to be fed and showered and all that kind of thing. This particular day, I was in a lot of pain. In my head, I used to get pains sometimes here, sometimes here. It would move around. And I think because the pain wasn't in the same place the whole time, it made it seem as though I was making it up, or that's how I felt anyway, that nobody really believed that these pains were that bad. But I had very strong painkillers. Can't remember what they were now, but it was a trade-off. I could take the painkillers. The pain would become bearable where it was unbearable. That's what made me take the pills. But it was the trade-off, because I then had such bad nausea that I used to feel I'd vomit if I moved my head. It was that bad. So I tried really hard to put up with the pain and then take the tablets, and really wished I hadn't. Life at that point, I always say, was like living in my head in a television set that wasn't tuned in. Couldn't see properly, I couldn't hear properly, I couldn't process thoughts. I wasn't able to achieve anything. I'm a workaholic. That's just me, I can't help it. But I wasn't achieving anything, and that was very depressing. Very depressing indeed. Friends stopped coming. They didn't know what to say or do. And if people came and was talking to me, the fatigue was so bad, I could fall asleep while they were talking to me. Their voices just became a drone and I'd fall asleep. Or I'd be trying to think of an answer to a question they'd asked me, and the effort was so much, I would still fall asleep. My parents were really upset. They would have willingly have taken the MS from me, saying that I was younger than them and had had their lives. As for my husband and my daughter who was at home, I was stopping them from enjoying life. I was the centre of attention. I was the one that was having to be looked after, stopping them from actually enjoying life. And one day I had run out of painkillers and the doctor came and he bought some more painkillers and he fetched me a glass of water. And I can remember saying to him, you know, how long do you think it will be before I start to feel better? And he said, I think if you were going to, you would have done by now. And then he left me. And I seriously thought of taking all of them, not for me per se, but for me to be able to give my family their lives back. Really, really hard decision. And who was going to find me? And it was going to be my 15-year-old daughter. And I couldn't do that to her. So the only thing I could do was prove everybody wrong, that there was something I could do. There was a plan B. And I was going to beat MS somehow. Didn't know how. The most I could do when I went for one of my toilet breaks, which were many, I could sit at the computer and 10 minutes, that was the maximum that I could do. And I was lucky enough to find some people in the US who'd got MS. I knew I wasn't unique, that there must be other people out there in the world similarly to me. And the internet wasn't like it is now. It was hard to connect with people back in 2003. But many of these people, I think probably about three people, gave me their details and they let me phone them and I spoke to them. And everybody said the same. If LDN didn't work for me, it wouldn't do me any harm. And that you could possibly get introductory side effects like headache, nausea, sleep disturbance of your dreams. I didn't care. I wanted all the side effects that you could get. I wanted to know that it was doing something for me, because honestly, I couldn't see anything else at that time that was going to be able to help me. I managed to find a doctor in Wales, Dr. Bob Lawrence, who sadly passed just a few months ago. And he gave me all the information and said to take it to my doctor and see if they would prescribe it for me. Now, in the in-between time, I had a new doctor and she wasn't a partner in the practice. She was just an employee. And I took it, all the information, left it with her. She said, come back in 2 weeks and she would talk to the partners in the practice and see if they would vote on allowing her to prescribe it, because it wasn't tried and tested for MS. Anyway, they said no, she couldn't prescribe it. But she said to me, if it was her, she would want to try it. So if I could find somebody to prescribe it for me, she would monitor me. Now, I was more than happy that I had somebody in my corner keeping an eye on me. And I went back to Dr. Bob Lawrence and he prescribed it for me. And it was disappointing that I took it for 3 weeks and it did nothing. You know, I had no side effects or anything. And as I say, I wanted to know it was going to work. I could have been taking, you know, aspirin, saccharin, anything, just a placebo, you know, it wasn't working. And then just after the 3 week mark, it was as though that television set was tuned in. You know, I could start to process thoughts. my double vision started to go, my hearing started to come back, and all the other awful things started to improve. Did it happen overnight? No, it didn't. And I had to work at it. And it took me about 18 months to get back to a position where I felt, you know, I was like me again, that I had control of my bowels and bladder again, which I found extremely upsetting. I used to think to myself, no, a small child, a three-year-old could hold it. Why couldn't I? You know, it wasn't for the fact I didn't try. I tried really hard and I couldn't. So I was then feeling a lot better. And what did I want to do with that knowledge that I had learned? Did I want to say to the world, I'm okay now and carry on with my life? Or did I want to help those people that were in the deep, dark place that I was in? And it was a no-brainer. I definitely wanted to shout about LDN from the rooftops as a treatment option for all these autoimmune diseases that LDN could work for. I mean, as trustee of the charity, you can't say that it's a miracle drug or a cure and that it works for everyone. It doesn't. But for the people that it works for, it could work very well. And it's certainly worth investigating and talking to an LDN prescriber. So in February 2004, I decided that the only way forward was to become a registered charity and to be taken seriously. But that took until the September, I believe, before we got the registration number. The Charity Commission worked really hard and diligently to make sure that it was going to be compliant in every which way, and it took so long. And the first trial that we can as a charity help fund is an MS trial. And I spoke to Dr. Jared Younger this week, I believe, and he has a protocol idea on a pilot study for LDN for MS, which is quite difficult because MS can be so variable from person to person. But that will be something really exciting and a challenge. So once we became a registered charity, we had to have a website, and we have a new website, which is really interesting. This is the homepage, and what is LDN, and you can find out more there. It tells you a little bit about the charity, how to find a pharmacist, prescriber, at LDN guides, conferences, our marketplace, and clinical trials. And here's the book launch, how to donate, our radio show, social media, and how you can subscribe to our newsletter. Now, there are tabs at the top which gives you all the information of what is included in the website. It's very comprehensive. It's a huge, huge website. It tells you about the trust, about me, our doctors, our medical doctors, our pharmacists, researchers, etc., fundraising, volunteering, donate, contact us. What is LDN? All the conditions that LDN can treat. And you can see the list, the headings are numerous. And let's just see neurological diseases. And you can see, other than MS, all these other neurological diseases that LDN has shown to work for. I mean, it's an amazing drug, and you know, if there is an autoimmune component to it, could possibly work. If it's pain, if it's put myself off now, it helps with fertility, and it also helps with mental health issues, which is a a really big problem right now, and especially with everything that's been going on with lockdown, etc. We have LDN guides, and in the guides we have a medical professional's guide, a patient guide, and a dosing protocol. And these were written by Dr. Sarah Zieldorf, who you will hear from later. And she, her and her team put together these very nice, I'll show you, guides. Let's just say the prescriber guide, for example. If I click on it here, and you can see it's a very short explanation, either side effects, there's the mechanism of action, different types of LDN, special considerations and key studies there, which is something I would suggest if you wanted your doctor to prescribe LDN for you, to certainly print out and take with you. It's very, very handy. We also have clinical trials and studies, and there are hundreds of them. Back in 2003, there weren't that many. Professor Ian Zagon and his team had been doing hundreds of studies in laboratories showing how LDN works, its safety, etc. And if we go to MS here, any condition you want, you put in that box there. And these are the trials and studies for MS. And you can see there are many, 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 many. And there's another page too. But it's nice if you have a condition that you can find out information there. This website is updated monthly, so any trials that have taken place in October will be entered in November. How to find a pharmacist, again, we have drop-down lists, telemed, which is a big deal right now. Many doctors have gone to doing virtual presentations. We have LDN documentaries here. We have six documentaries, and here they are. They're all free to view. You don't have to pay. We've got one on opioids and pain management, which is a big one, where they're talking about people that are on opioids using ultra low dose or microdosing, which can be used under supervision with an LDN literate doctor who understands about using LDN or microdosing with alongside opioids. They can use 0.001 using the same amount of opioids. It makes the opioid more effective, which means they can start to titrate the opioids down whilst titrating the opioids up. And the stories that I've heard from people who have been addicted to opioids through no fault of their own, we're talking prescription opioids here, and they've been able to come off the opioids and just be on LDN for their pain and haven't gone through withdrawal. And since doctors are not prescribing opioids like they used to, you know, that's quite a big deal. So we've got LDN in Scotland and in Ireland, and we have got the Game Changer, which is LDN and cancer documentary, really, really well worth listening to. Bullseye, as you might guess, that's to do with Lyme disease. And we have the initial LDN story, which was the first documentary that we made. We also have an LDN radio show. We have newsletters. We have Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Health Unlocked, you name it, we've got it. We have video interviews that you can actually search for a condition. You know, if you wanted, let's stick with MS. Here we go, MS. And it will then bring up the videos of people with MS sharing their stories, lectures, etc. So that's really handy if you want to hear what other people have to say. We've got a Vimeo channel, we've got a YouTube channel. The radio show goes on Captivate, it goes on Spotify, Mixcloud, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts. It doesn't actually say that on there, but it does. Apple Podcasts, it goes everywhere. So you can tune in from many different platforms. And this is the LDN book launch. We've got some more videos coming up. And on the, this is our events page. We have the LDN book here. And you can actually, on this page, listen to all the authors who wrote a chapter. And just to explain what was in the LDN book one, so I don't get it wrong, we're going to read it out here. We've got the history and pharmacology of LDN, multiple sclerosis, lupus, inflammatory bowel disease. And that was written by Dr. Jill Smith. If you know anything about Crohn's disease and LDN, you'll know that it was Dr. Jill Smith who did the first studies on LDN for Crohn's disease. And the results were remarkable, pretty similar to what Dan was saying to his 12-year-old with Crohn's disease. Chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia, thyroid conditions, restless leg syndrome, which is amazing because I had restless legs and my legs thrashed around so much, I'd actually rubbed all the hair off my legs. Depression, autism, cancer. Now, the cancer chapter was by Professor Angus Dalgleish and Dr. Wei Liu, and they had done trials and in the laboratory for LDN. And they had found that once you'd got cancer into remission by using pulse dosing, that they could actually create cell death. They had a paper published back in 2016, just after the book was launched. The book was launched in February 2016. And of course, this is the book launch of the LDN book two. Now we have, again, the history and pharmacology of LDN in chapter one. It's the only chapter that is anything similar to the first book. It's going to be a set of volume of a series of books with different volumes. And the updated chapter has a different mechanism of action as well, which was discovered by Professor Angus Dalgleish. And then we have chronic pain. I mean, that is a really big thing that LDN seems to be working really well for. We've got gut health, which includes irritable bowel syndrome, celiac, all the different conditions that you could use LDN for the gut. And that was written by gastroenterologist Dr. Leonard Weinstock. Then we have a chapter on dermatological conditions, which is written by Apple Bodmer, who is a dermatologist. We have Parkinson's disease, pediatric conditions, and women's health. Dr. Cortez is a pediatrician, a gynecologist. And she works with all different manners of women's health, like endometriosis, polycystic ovaries, painful periods, heavy periods, etc. Brain health injuries, dissociative disorders, which is quite a big thing in the mental health world, as is post-traumatic stress disorder. And there are many people who suffer with this, I initially thought it was war veterans who had post-traumatic stress, but it's also rape victims, domestic violence, children with bullying even. It is a really hot topic right now. And the last chapter is Lyme disease and other tick-borne illnesses. So there is a lot there to learn when you put them together. Now, when I was trying to put together this second volume, I started off by writing a list of chapters where there had been more studies and research that the doctor could write about. They're all medical professionals, by the way. They're all doctors who have written the chapters. And I just thought it was so exciting that I could add this and this and this. And I presented it to Chelsea Green, who said to me, "You have too many chapters. You cannot have that many chapters." So I said, "Well, can't we just make the book thicker? Does it have to be a standard size book?" And they explained that no, there is a cutoff point where it becomes too expensive to do a thicker book. It would be better to have it the same size as the first book and then have a third book in a series. So there will be a book three. So that is really exciting. But there are many places that the book can be sold. If you go back to the book launch, and you will see all the different links here. This is today's, where you can buy discounted books. So, and a lot of them, pardon me, have free shipping. If you wanted the, I mean, Barnes and Noble, I'm finished with this now. Amazon, they sell it in different countries, and also the book is in Kindle format, so you don't have to buy a physical book. If you want to save the trees, you can have it in as a Kindle book, so that's really interesting. So once the LDN Research Trust was established, and we've seen the website there, the whole aim and goal was to get LDN out there and get it trialled for MS. But that was a virtually impossible task. I tried really hard. Not that many people knew about LDN like they do today. I mean, we're talking, 16 and a half years ago. So after trying every which way, and it was going to cost thousands, and there wasn't enough doctors to support it, etc., etc., the best thing to do was to flip it and get more doctors interested. So it was a case of reaching out to those that did prescribe, talking to them, trying to find out how we could connect with other doctors. And then we were talking to more pharmacists, and they would introduce us to doctors. And so it just snowballed from there. Not as fast as I would like, but it's pretty healthy now. And not just in England and Australia, but Canada, Europe. We have people in India, in Arab countries. It's amazing where LDN is now. And if you've got a chronic condition, you probably know somebody through somebody who knows about LDN if they're not necessarily taking it. So a lot of what we do, if we have a gastroenterologist who is interested but wants to speak to somebody else, we, you know, refer them to Dr. Leonard Weinstock, who, as I said, is a gastroenterologist, and he's also one of our medical advisors, and he's always happy and willing to speak to people. So we do a lot of introductions and try to spread the word. And then it was a case of, let's get all these people together and get them talking about LDN. And we did have a couple of conferences, one in Glasgow, one in Ireland, one in England, small conferences. And then in 2013, Dr. Mark Mandel said to me, I was interviewing him on my radio show, and he said, when are you going to have a conference in Chicago? And I said, when you help me organize it. And we had it in October 2013, 4 months after he was on my radio show. It was organized that quickly, and it was amazing. We had people from so many different countries, I can't remember now, but there were a lot of people that traveled a long way to be there, and we had amazing speakers. It was a one-day conference. From there, we went to Las Vegas, and I believe that was a two-day conference. Then we went to Florida, and that was a 2.5, it was a long half day, but it was a three-day conference. And we've just gone from strength to strength. I mean, we are so lucky having so many dedicated prescribers, and I'd like to thank all the exhibitors that come that help fund the conferences. And the speakers give up give up their time to come and speak. We don't pay their expenses or their travel, food or accommodation. They do it because their heart is in it, and they want to help people to learn about LDN and take it. And as I said before, Dan did an amazing job on explaining about LDN. Now, there are many people that tell me that when they take LDN, they haven't had colds, they haven't had flu, they've been the healthiest they've ever been. Does that happen to me? No. Any cold, flu, anything that's going around, I catch it. And it really knocks me for six when I'm not well. I can lose my bladder control, but I don't panic. Of course, I did initially. But the pattern is that once everything settles down, I'm fine. I can have vertigo. I can have stomach upsets, headaches, but it's usually just temporary. Although the last bout of vertigo I had did last quite a while. But ordinarily, you know, I bounce back, but it doesn't protect me like it does some people. I mean, if those people are able to escape catching things, brilliant. But I don't know why, but it doesn't do it for me. So that is about it, really, that I can tell you about my story and LDN and the LDN Research Trust. But our goals and aims are still to spread the word, help people, and get a clinical trial sorted. If we could manage that, and get this protocol in place and get it all agreed by the medical professionals and trustees, you'll be hearing about it, because I'll be trying to fundraise for that. Fundraising is never easy, and especially during these difficult times, it's very problematic. And everybody that works for the LDN Research Trust is on a voluntary basis. We don't get paid, so every penny goes to helping. I mean, there are certain things now that we can't do in-house that have to be paid for, but we don't employ staff. We just have people do jobs as they are required. So if anybody has any spare time and they would like to help, we would love to hear from you. I don't know if anybody has any questions, if Monica is there. Hi, Monica.
Oh, let me unmute myself. Now you can hear me. Oh, thank you, Linda, for sharing your story. Wow, how incredible to hear where you come from. So thank you so much for sharing that. So yeah, I don't see that we have any questions at this moment.
But if anybody has any later, when the recording goes out, if they would like to email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. That's the short version of the email.
Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.